Today's daf in Masechet Yoma brought to you from Yerushalayim. Yer HaKedesh is daf Pei Beit, and we're holding right here on the top at the Halakha Mishnah, HaTinokot. So now we're talking about the dinim of Chinuch when it comes to fasting on Yom HaKippurim. And there would be two issues in Chinuch. One issue in Chinuch is the way we generally think about Chinuch. It's getting people used to being Mekayim the Mitzvah. So obviously, in normal circumstances, I mean to say, we will give you a mitzvah of chinuch to fast for 1 hour on Yom Kippur. Doesn't really seem to make much sense, because chinuch is always to do the mitzvah. So either you fast on Yom Kippur, or you don't fast on Yom Kippur. But suppose you would want to be mechanech your child in using a lulav and etrog, right? So you figure, okay, so I'll get you a posel lulav and I'll give you a lemon. You know, that's not chinuch. The chinuch is always in terms of the actual asiyas hamitzvah. So you would have to get an actual lulav and an actual esrog. Over here, we understand that we have the problem of chinuch. It's not a question in the asiya. It's a question in the potential of the asiya. In other words, a child does not have the capability to safely fast. So because of that, we have the concept of getting them used to, being mechanech them, getting them used to doing the mitzvah, which means that there would be two levels of the concept of chinuch, as the Gemara is going to end up coming out. One is introducing them to the mitzvah, and the other is the actual, being mekayim, the actual mitzvah before the time. So this would be the question that we're involved in over here. What it says here in the Mishnah is ein ma'anim otam. So ein ma'anim otam means that we do not look to go ahead and to actually force them to do a ta'anit. This is the way that Rashi understands. Ein ma'anim otam means that we don't put them into a position of keeping food from them. In fact, la halacha, the way we paskin, and the Rambam, the way he brings it, ein ma'anim otam means we don't allow them to fast. It's not simply a question of our not giving them food. We don't allow them to fast. Remember, we already talked about earlier the question of the halacha that in general, ein ma'achilin, we don't do a feeding of iser to anybody else either, even for ketanim. That's the way we pass. We had a whole question of why that doesn't apply to the issue of inui. It turned out that there were actually some rishonim who held that it does apply and that you wouldn't actually give food to a child directly. Okay, but we brought the different shitas that explained why it's not necessarily part of ein ma'achilin. So, but in any event, there is no din, it says in the Mishnah, of being ma'anim otam b'yom ha-kippurim fully, avo mechanchim otam lifnei shana v'lifnei shnatayim, b'shvil shiyu regilim b'mitzvot. So there's many things that are funny about this Mishnah. The concept of lifnei shana, what exactly does lifnei shana mean? I mean, if you want to talk about being mechanech them a year or 2 years, say so. Say, we're mechanech them before a year or before 2 years. What exactly before what does that mean, before a year, before 2 years? And then when you say mechanech them in order that they should get used to mitzvahs, starts us feeling very suspicious that what we're dealing over here is perhaps a dual-tiered level of chinuch, which would mean, look, if they're really tinokot, meaning they're really babies, and they're nowhere near puberty, so then we will not allow them to suffer. We won't cause them to suffer. But we will get them used to suffering in the sense that we'll put off breakfast for half an hour, you know? Maybe that's what it means. But then the idea of lifnei shana time would mean a year before the time of the normal chinuch. So the implication of the Mishnah would be that if you're telling me 2 years before the year that we would be mechanech them, what you really mean is 3 years before they become actually chayav midiraisa. That would be the simple meaning. If you're telling me 2 years, then you would mean 2 years before their chayav midiraisa. That's what the implications would be. Now, please also let's remember that a female of 12 years old is in her 13th year. A male of 13 years old is in his 14th year. And that the Gemara uses the years in that way. So let's not get confused by saying year 13, thinking that that means year 13 is 13 years old. Year 13 is 12-year-old. So the female in her 13th year is already a 12-year-old who was chayav d'oraisa. That is the year that is called pirkan. That's called the year of puberty. So it's during that year that generally she will reach puberty, and a male will generally reach puberty during his 14th year, which is the 13-year-old. So that's the way the Gemara is going to be using the years. Don't get confused. So again, the implications of the Mishnah is that we're talking about 2 or 1 year before the year of Pirkan, and that would mean before a total of 3 years or 2 years before actual puberty. And how would we understand that kind of usage of the word? Because what we would understand is that the way to make them ragil b'mitzvot would be to give them a brief fast, give them a taste of fasting, and then the lifnei that we're referring to, the year that is the actual year that we're referring to as the benchmark year, that year was the year before their puberty, meaning that that was a mitzvah that they should fast midrabanan the whole day, and that was the level of chinuch that was called doing the actual mitzvah. Now, that would be a reasonable explanation of the Mishnah. Now, we're going to see that there's other issues. I mean, first of all, how do you ever bring up a year or two? What is that supposed to mean, a year or two? Either it's a year or it's 2 years. I mean, so tell me what the din is. Don't tell me a year or two. So that's the Gemara's first question. Never makes sense to say a year or two. If you're telling me that there's a chi of 2 years, so then fine. So tell me 2 years. I mean, if it's only 1 year, then you can say 2 years. So how does that make sense? Omer of Chista, that's not a problem. Because the Mishnah may be giving you a window which you're supposed to intelligently apply. Obviously, if we're talking about over here, causing a child to suffer to some extent, imanimotom, but, I mean, so then it would depend on the physical constitution, right? So a child that is healthy and doesn't really, you know, matter very much, if they fast an hour or two, so then it would be 2 years. For a child who suffers, so then it would be only 1 year. That would be the simple meaning. So therefore, habachole, habamari, one is meant for a child that is of weak constitution, as we would say, and one is of strong constitution. Omer Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, look, I mean, basically, if you analyze the Mishnah, I think what it's saying is like this, that if you have a ben chet, or a ben tet, now, even though it says ben, don't let it fool you, it's talking about a female over here. So Ben Shmona means she a bat Shmona. In other words, this is a healthy female who is now in her 9th year. That would be a Ben Shmona. A Ben Teisha is a healthy female who is now in her 10th year. That means that she is basically 3 years away at the beginning of this from actually being Chayevet, she's a female, Dioraita. So she's 8 years old, she's 9 years old, we're going to be mechanech her l'sha'ot. And that would be the healthy. Once she becomes 10 years old and 11 years old, then she would already be doing the d'rabbanan, a full day, mashlimi mid'rabbanan. And ben yud beit mashlimim b'dioraita, and of course, all of this is b'tinoket. It's talking about a female. So again, let's understand what it is that Rav Huna is doing here. Again, kipshuto, learning the Mishnah. It's a little bit complicated, and it's easy to get confused. But really, if we look at it closely, we'll see that it makes a great deal of sense. As I pointed out to you, the Mishnah clearly seems to be talking about two different levels of chinuch, which is how the Gemara is going to gradually introduce us to the ideas until we understand it fully. So it's talking about a lifnei, either 1 year, a lifnei 2 years. Now, lifnei would mean before something else. What is that something else? One way of understanding it would be before puberty. The other way of understanding it is that we're talking about a pre-chinuch chinuch. So that before the year that we would start demanding that a child fast, there would also be an additional year or two of gradual introduction to fasting. So therefore, if we avoid the problem of one or two, in other words, we're talking, let's take a healthy child. So then what the Mishnah would be saying is, says Rav Huna, a healthy child would start basically for 2 years before actually needing to fast a whole day, which itself is 2 years before puberty. So there would be 2 years of full chinuch, an additional 2 years of hourly chinuch, of just getting used to the idea of fasting. And therefore, I'll talk about a female first, and I will tell you, okay, so if that's the case, we would talk about a female who is 8 years old, a female who is 9 years old. And then we talk about, that's for hours. And then we talk about a female who's 10 years old and a female who's 11 years old. That would be full fasting for 2 years. And then a female who's 12 years old, then she would be chayevet midiraisa. Fits in very well with the Mishnah, because the word lifnei shana would mean the before the benchmark year of the chiyev derabbanan to be mashlim, not before puberty. So that's how Rav Huna expresses the whole idea. Rav Nachman says, let me express the same idea in terms of a male. So in terms of a male, let's just put it off a year. So a male who is 9 years old, meaning he's in his 10th year, or he's 11 years old, meaning he's in his 12th year, I mean, a 10-year-old, meaning he's in his 11th year. So for those 2 years, he's given an extra hour before he can eat breakfast and so on. If he's already 11 years old, which means he's in his 12th year, or he's 12 years old, which means he's in his 13th year, then he is mashlim midrabanan. So 2 years of chinuch b'sha'ot is the lifnei, the first year of the shana of the hashlama midrabanan. This is how they understand it. The difference between 1 year or 2 years, that we already explained, as Rav Chisda explained. Obviously, it's a question of health as well. Good. So now there's no machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Rav Huna was referring to a female. Rav Nachman is referring to a male. And everything is great. Now, Rav Yochanan throws a monkey wrench into this whole discussion by saying there is no such thing as hashlama derabana. So Rav Yochanan says, look, the Rabbanan never said that a child should fast a whole day. There's only one concept of chinuch when it comes to fasts, and that's to get used gradually to fasting. But there's never a time that the Rabbanan said that a child is supposed to be deprived of food and drink for an entire day. If you have to do such a thing, midiraisa, fine. The Rabbanan of chinuch is just to gradually enable that by starting some years before. That's all that he says. So if that's the case, so then if the Ben Yud or Ben Yud Aleph, so that would mean taking your case where you're talking about this female. Okay, so then I would say in the case of Rav Huna that the correct way to say it is not that there's such a concept of hashlama, and he's not coming to address now what the lifnei means, and therefore a Ben Yud Aleph, Ben Yud Beit. So this Ben Yud or Ben Yud Aleph, it's only Lisha'ot. Ben Yud Beit of a girl, she's 12 years old. Okay, so then and only then is she Mashlim Midiraisa. And that's what Rav Huna should have said. I don't know where he comes off starting to talk about an 8-year-old. There's no such thing as an 8-year-old. The whole thing begins of a girl when she's 10 years old or 11 years old. It's for only, depending on how well she is. And you know, then when she's chayevet diraisa as a 12-year-old, fine. Now let's take a look at the Mishnah, says the Gemara, and utilize the words of the Mishnah and see how the different shitas fit into the Mishnah. So, the Mishnah said, here's the exact lashon of our Mishnah, and let's see how you figure the lashon. It's not. Hatinokot ein ma'aninotam biyom ha-kippurim, avo mechanchinotam lifnei shana v'lifnei shtayim. Now, how in the world does Rabbi Yochanan understand the word lifnei? Lifnei, what extra year is there? Is there a year or two, depending on health, of chinuch? Then darn it, say so. Shana or shnatayim. What do you mean lifnei? there must be a remez in that word lifnei to that additional year of the higher level of chinuch, which Rav Huna was referring to and Rav Nachman was referring to. How is Rav Yochanan going to read the Mishnah? So therefore, if you're talking about the lashon of the Mishnah according to the way Rav Huna was learning, Bishlam al Rav Huna or Rav Nachman, yes. Lifnei shana, lifnei shtayim, the lifnei meaning that before the first year that we will ask you, midrabbanan, to keep the entire day as a fast. That's what it's referring to. So then it's talking about a total of 4 years, maybe, in a healthy child, right? So that would be fine. That would be lidivrayim, or sometimes it would be lifnei shtayim lidivrayim, depending on how healthy the child is. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, what's this lifnei jazz? Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan, when it talks about shana or shtayim, it does not mean a shana or shtayim in the sense of before the year that the Rabbanim were mechayev it. And the Mishnah is confusing. It should not read basically this way. What you should say is that, and this is the way we have to change the girsa, say, rather, that the meaning is not my, but rather ema, shana oshtayim samuch lepirka, which is straightforward. Take out the lifnei, put in simply shana oshtayim. And then when it says a year or two, what is it referring to? A year or two right before puberty. That's what it means, the year of puberty. And that last year was the year that they would generally reach puberty. So in other words, according to the Mishnah, you'd start with a poor constitution a year before puberty, doing what? Fasting an extra hour or something, just to get him used to the idea of fasting, which next year he will have to do. If it's a nice, healthy constitution, so then 2 years before puberty. But there's no such thing as 4 years. That's ridiculous. 3 years, and then there's 2 years where he would have to fast the whole day. Mishnah never said that. If we can get rid of that word, somuch. There is no somuch, according to Rabbi Yochanan. There's just a year or two, which makes a lot of sense. That's what we're referring to as the amount of time that you're going to actually be mechanech. And there is no actual additional year that we're referring to. Okay, so remember, we need to change this to read my into the actual ema. Tashma. So let's take a look at a braita. A braita seems to actually say precisely what it is that Rabbi Yochanan said and doesn't leave any doubt that the way that we just fixed the Mishnah is absolutely correct. Tashma, the Tani Rabba Bar Shmuel, Tino Kot Ein Ma'anin Otam B'Yom HaKippurim, Avon B'Chanchin Otan, Shana Oshtayim Somuch L'Pirka. Note, there's no word lifnei. And it says clearly 1 or 2 years right before puberty, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan, this makes a great deal of sense. So Bishlam al Rabbi Yochanan, yes, necha. But according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, there does not seem to be any meaning to this braita. Amr lecha Rabbanan, those two Rabbanan, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, they will say, no, hold on a minute, gentlemen. Did we not always agree that there were two levels of chinuch? One is the level of chinuch to actually be mekayim the mitzvah. That would be hashlama. The other level of chinuch is the concept that many people think chinuch actually means, always, which is not true. And that means getting them used to doing the mitzvah by sort of introducing them to waving around lemons, and that way eventually they'll wave around esrogim. So that is not what we're talking about here. Here, we're talking about real chinuch. And when it says in the Braita, before puberty, that's referring to the real chinuch of Hashlama, according to us. The whole day. Isn't that true? I mean, after all, in the Mishnah, we were talking about mechanchim otam l'sha'ot. Here, we're not talking about mechanchim otam l'sha'ot b'shvil shiur regilim b'mitzvot. We're talking about a chiyuv of actually doing the mitzvah. That's a whole different idea. So my chinuch nami diktani, the word chinuch in this braita, is referring to the real mitzvah, hashlama. I don't understand, but didn't didn't the Mishnah say that the idea is to get them used to mitzvahs? And doesn't it say beferish in the Braisa that we use the word chinuch in the context of fasting for Yom Kippur in that way of just getting them used to, not really doing it? So umi kori lechinuch hashlama, does the Tana indeed refer to fasting on Yom Kippur a whole day as chinuch? Doesn't it say in the Braita, consistent with our Mishnah, Vatanya, when we say chinuch, what do we mean? Eze chinuch. Let's say the child was used to eating at 7 o'clock in the morning. Give him breakfast at 8 o'clock. If he was used to eating at 8 o'clock, give him breakfast at 9 o'clock. That's what it's telling me. So how can you tell me that the word chinuch in this braita means hashlama? Omar Rava Bar Ula, well, obviously, trei chinuchi havi. There are two different concepts of chinuch, aren't there? Wasn't that clear to you in the Mishnah? So this braita is talking about the chinuch that is introduced by our Mishnah as being lifnei, the real chinuch of Hashlama, you see? So according to Reb Nachman and according to Rav Huna, it's actually quite beautiful. The Mishnah, by simply inserting one extra word, is putting you on notice. Listen, we're talking about a different level of chinuch. How do I justify that level of chinuch? Shiyu regilim b'mitzvot. Not an actual kiyum of the mitzvah, but getting used to what you need to get used to be mekayim the mitzvah. Normally, why would we say shiur regilim b'mitzvahs? We would simply say mechanchim otam. That's what we always talk about, the gil of chinuch, right? I mean, isn't all chinuch to get people used to something? And that's the whole point, says Rav Huna Reb Nachman. No. The chinuch in the Mishnah is a chinuch l'sha'ot. The chinuch in the Baraita that talked about 1 or 2 years, that was the real chinuch of Hashlama. And that's why it didn't talk about samuch. So two very different approaches. The Mishnah as written really only makes sense according to Reb Nachman Reb Huna. It talks about two completely different chinuchs. It talks about two completely different periods of chinuch. And it is making it dependent on the health of the child. According to Rabbi Yochanan, there is no second level of chinuch at all when it comes to fasting. We have to change the lashon of the Mishnah to avoid that word lifnei. And what's the point of a phony chinuch, therefore? Why are you giving your child a lemon instead of an esrog? That he should be used to the idea of the mitzvahs. But eino chinami, it's not the way chinuch usually works to be mechayavim in the mitzvah. So actually, when you look into the Gemara and read it properly, it makes a heck of a lot of sense. Okay, we're now ready for our Kapitan. Our Kapitan seems to be having a senior moment over here. At your youthful age, Richie, you can't figure out how to get off that mute. Okay, how about you move your mouth, and I'll say the words. Zok de heleke mishnah. Okay. Why does Doc leave us when we need him most? Ubra sheheiricha. So now we have this concept of which we'll see applies to everyone. It's this concept called bulmus. Now, of course, bulmus, bulmusia today, nowadays, does refer to generally the same idea of a food disorder. And what's called a bulmus in the Gemara is talking about an absolutely irresistible need to eat, which leaves you physically in desperate need of food. And otherwise, you can go into shock. You know, your eyes turn dark, you turn pale, heartbeat increases, and so on and so forth. Now, in a case of a pregnant woman, over there, we are always nervous about cravings, because cravings can very quickly develop into a bulimus, which is a life-threatening situation. So, in a normal case where a person feels a bulimus, we'll see that we immediately will respond. Over here, even if she just has this craving, we are going to make sure that she is given that food. Now, the Gemara traces craving in pregnancy to a hormonal insistence by the fetus, which is fed into the mother's bloodstream, to provide the necessary ingredients for the nourishment of the fetus because she has not been eating properly. So, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this kind of thing, and you see it also in babies. They know what they need. So you can have sometimes a toddler that is eating, in the old days when they used to have plaster in the wall, if she's missing calcium and so on, they will eat the wall. Which certainly doesn't taste very good, but make actual holes in the wall just to get the nourishment. And this is it's an amazing thing. I mean, this you find in animals all the time. They'll know exactly what fruit they need, what tree they need, what medication they need. You know that we've actually discovered certain medications by following animals around. I'm sure you're aware of that. The elephants will travel hundreds of miles to get the type of medication that they'll need for infertility and stuff like that. I mean, it's astonishing. So in any event, the Gemara understands that the nature of a craving is actually coming from the fetus. And it's not part of normal, because people usually don't get that level of craving. And because of that, both the mother and the fetus will be endangered if they don't get the nourishment that's required, because she is being led about by that little parasite in her who is telling her what she absolutely must eat, and her whole constitution will respond to that. So because of that, ma'achilinota ad shetashiv nafsha, we will give her to eat until we see that she no longer has that desperation. Now, when you're talking about a chole, where somebody is ill. Now, we're going to see that this applies to anyone. It's not only a pregnant woman, but over there we would have to see simonim, that he's actually being affected by a bulmus. So he would lose all his coloration, the blood pressure would go down, and so on. But what about stam, a person who just does not have an appetite and is sick? What's the halacha over there? So, ma'achilino to'a pibikiyim. Look, we ask doctors, does this guy need to eat? If so, then we have to make sure that he needs to eat. How about if there's no doctors that know anything that are there? What do we do then? Well, then ma'achilino to'a piatzmo. If he feels he needs to eat, then we give him to eat until he says, okay, I'm all right. So, obviously, what we're talking about over here is these type of illnesses that can actually end up being a sakanas nefashas if they're allowed to continue to a point of danger. Tan Rabbanan. So it says in a braita, obviously this is not nugea only Yom HaKippurim. Let's say that we have over here a pregnant woman who smells basar kodesh or tarfus. Oh, she's walking by this pork restaurant, and she's, oh my God, I need to have some of that. So what do we do? If we try to first get away with whatever we can without actually filling her up with pork chops, or with hegdash lavdil, so we'll stick a kush. The kush is what we had back in Kalim, the dinim of a kush. The kush is that spindle, that you twist around on your hand. So you'll put in basically a stick into the sauce and let her suck on that and see if that satisfies her enough. Now, if that's not enough, just put that on her mouth. Maybe that'll help. If that's enough for her, then fine. If not, so give her some of the actual rotav. So give her some of the water, the gravy, where over there it's usher because of tam ke'ikar, obviously. But over there there's a shiloh, maybe it's only derabbanan, but it's certainly less than the actual eating the actual food, because you'd have kisayis, b'chachilas pras, and so on. See if that helps. So give her some actual rotav, maybe dip some bread in that pork sauce. See if she likes that. Now, if that helps, that's good. Init yashva da'atam mutav. If that doesn't help, then give her the pork chops, Ma'achilu notashu manatzmo. Because ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh, this is dangerous. And the only things that we would require a person to accept personal danger would be avodah zarah, gilui arayot, ushvichud damim. And we're going to go through in the Gemara how we know that those three things you accept danger. Avodah zarah minala. So let's take a look at avodah zarah. How do we know that you need to actually be willing to give up your life not to do Avodah Zarah. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, when it says, V'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. So if the Torah says that you're ready to give up your life, then why does it need to say you have to be willing to give up your money? I mean, and if you tell me that the Torah is omed on the psychology that a person is more likely to give up his life than to give up his money, so then if that is the greater thing, then im nema b'chol modecha, then lama nema b'chol nafshecha. So just say the most valuable thing to you is what you have to give up. Because basically people have different levels of what they value, which they may not be able to even articulate. Im yesh lecha adam shegufo chaviv alav bimamono. I mean, there are people whose lives are more valuable to them than their money. Now, there's not many people like that. Honestly, there's not many people like that, because when you look around, you see that people totally destroy their lives for their money. So, I mean, they do things which are going to lead them to a very early demise, and they'll risk heart attacks, and they'll go to meetings, and they'll, you know, and their heart is beating, and they don't know if they're going to wake up in the morning, but I can't possibly not go through with this meeting and whatever. So basically, their money is more valuable to them than their lives. So if you've got that kind of person, that's one thing. There are people that are smart enough to value their life more than their money. So therefore, to that kind of person, you have to say, b'chol nafshecha. But im yesh lecha adam shemamono chaviv alav migufo, lekach ne'emar, b'chol miyodecha. So basically, that v'ahavta is essentially not to give up on that love and to go ahead and to take that which is your deepest love in life and to betray it to an idol, right? So it would be the same. I mean, a person in love would feel the same way about his lover. You know, I mean, you're gonna go and you're going to be treacherous towards your lover because somebody put a gun in your back, and therefore you'll go sleep with her most bitter enemy. I mean, that's horrific. I'm not going to do that. So over here, Allah is kama v'kama. If you're talking about the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then it means that that has to be more valuable to you than anything else, not to betray that. Okay, but how do we know that, I mean, Gilui HaRayot and Shfichut Damim is just a mitzvah, right? So we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not put his mitzvahs ahead of the love that he has of Yisrael's lives. How do we know that? Because it says beferish in the Torah, v'chai b'hem. V'chai b'hem means I'm giving you these mitzvahs to live with, not to die for. So then what makes you think that these particular mitzvahs, gilui arayos and shfichas damim, why would they be different than any other mitzvah? So that we learn from a braisa, the Tanya. Rebbe Omer, ki kasher yakum ish arei'ehu retzacho nefesh, kein hadavar hazeh. Now, this is a very strange situation. We're talking about over there a na'araha me'urasa, which we had used before about inui, right? Advar she inat eshes re'ehu. Here we're going to use this case as a fascinating argument for the entire nature of the relationship of gilui arayos to mesiras nefesh. Now, note that it says in the pasuk, l'na'ara lo ta'aseh davar, don't do anything to that poor girl, she's a victim. Ein l'na'ara chet mavet, she didn't do anything wrong. Ki kasher yakum ish arei'ehu retzacho nefesh, kein hadavar hazeh. What happened to this poor girl is what would have happened to the victim of a murder. Are you going to blame the victim of a murder for his murder? That's the simple meaning of the pasuk, which is a little bit ridiculous. I mean, I need to make this whole, it's the same as a murder. I mean, I understand you said at the beginning of the pasuk, it says beferish, that l'nara lo ta'aseh davar, ein l'nara chet maves, tza'aka ha'nara, ve'ein moshiya lash. Poor girl was probably screaming. There was no one around to save her. I mean, so what do you need to go into this whole jazz about this is the same as being a victim of a murder? Hala, says Rebbe. Hareze balala meid, it introduces it as if it's coming to talk about a murder in order to tell you something about the din of the Nara, but it doesn't tell you anything. And in those cases, we understand that what's actually happening is that the Torah is trying to teach you something about the murder from the din of the Nara, the exact opposite. That's called Abar Lelamed V'Nimtza Lamed. It comes to teach you Lelamed, and instead it turns out to be the Lamad. It's the thing that you learned out too. Just like the Nara Hamurasa is Nitan Lahatzila B'Nafsha. Just like it says Ki B'Sadeh Mitza'a. He found this victim. This girl is in the field. Tza'aka Nara Hamurasa. We need to assume that this poor girl was screaming. Ve'ein Moshiala, and there was no one there to save her. Now, what do you mean there was no one there to save her? Maybe there were lots of people there to save her, but there was no way to save her. The guy was too strong or whatever, right? But what this means is there was no way to save her is telling me, save her however you can. So if you need to take a stone and bust this guy's head open and kill him, then save her by doing that. So then that means this teaches you that you can save her at the cost of the life of the rapist. So just like the Nara Amurasa Nitan Hatzila B'Nafsho, Afrotseach Nitan Hatzila B'Nafsho, so too, if someone is going to murder someone else, you could say to yourself, look, I mean, somebody's going to die. Either the victim that this guy's going out to kill, or the victim that I'm going to kill, who is the murderer. I mean, so what tells you to take a life to save a life? Only the pasuk that compares the murder victim to the rape victim. That's the point. So in which case, the comparison to the murder is actually in the opposite direction. It's coming to tell me what the din is of murder. Nothing to do with what the din is of the nara. And now, what in fact is the relationship of the Rotseach that would tell me something about a Nara? So it tells me that in an opposite event, meaning that you are being threatened if you don't do an Avera. So it's telling me, just like I understand that if somebody puts a gun to my back and says, you go and kill a victim, and if not, I'm going to kill you. Just like you cannot do that. And how do we know you cannot do that? That we'll see in a moment. But just like you cannot do that, the same thing would be true if he says, go rape this girl who is a murasa. Obviously, we're not talking about rape stam. We're talking about rape of a married woman. So, af nara murasa. If he says, I'm going to kill you unless you sleep with this nara murasa, then you have to allow yourself to be killed and not to do the avera. Now, you're telling me it's a given that I'm not allowed to kill somebody else to save my own life when the guy's got a gun to my back? How do I know that? I mean, somebody's got to die, so whoever it is, why should it be me? Don't I have a requirement to watch my own life? So I should kill the other guy in order to watch my own life. Isn't there generally a principle of Shelcha Kodem? So how are we so certain that when it comes to murder, I should not pull the trigger on someone else and allow someone else to pull the trigger on me? So Roter Gufe Minolan, how do we know it? Well, it's basically a svara. And it actually came about, our understanding of this came about through a famous maisa that actually happened, where a certain person in Rava's community came to Rava and said to him, I don't know what to do. Because the godfather over here, Omerli Mori Doroi, actually means the mayor, but apparently it was a godfather. So the godfather told me, either you are going to kill so-and-so, Katle Laplanya, and if not, we're getting rid of you. Yelo Kaltina Lach, what do I do? Omar Leis, Rava said to him, do nothing. Niktalach, let him kill you. Velo Tiktol, you have no right to kill anyone else. Because my chazit de dama didach shomak tvei. What makes you assume that your blood is redder than the guy that he wants to knock off, right? Maybe this other guy's blood is redder. Now, what does that mean? It's ridiculous. What Rava is saying is like this. Basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you, do not murder. And therefore, it's like any other mitzvah. The difference, however, is that by any other mitzvah, the Torah specifically says, I value your lives of my children, B'nai Yisrael, I value them more than my mitzvahs. And I don't want you dying for my mitzvahs. But over here, one of you is going to die. Now, you're the one who's making the assumption that in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow or other, the life, the red blood that's in you is somehow more valuable than the red blood that's... How do you know that? How do you have a right to apply V'chai Behem to you if, in fact, ultimately somebody's going to die? So since you have no way of doing that, that's the logic of Rava. Basically, all mitzvahs would be mechai of you to give up your life, except that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I don't want people dying for my mitzvahs. But over here, if you go ahead and you will be over the mitzvah, you're not going to be saving anybody's life because you're going to be killing somebody anyway. So in that case, there's nothing personal here. This has to do with the value of life. Life has to do with the level of simple life force. Okay, you want to put it in simple physical terms, you've got redder blood than the other guy has. What is that supposed to mean? Blood is blood. Nefesh is nefesh. You can't make those determinations. We're talking about life and death, to be or not to be. That's all. The other stuff is moralistic nonsense. This is existential. You can't make those kind of determinations. And therefore, the chiyuv on you is actually not to take action. If you don't take action, then the other person kills you, he kills you. But at least you didn't do something that went against HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon. So it's a beautiful svara when you see it in that sense. So since when it comes to that, we understand that when it comes to ritzicha, you can't kill someone else. So then, if that's the case, it would be obviously because of the hekesh. Now it's true also about the case of the Nara Amurasa. So if somebody puts a gun to your back, what it's saying is, this is one mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that he does not want you to be over, even if he values your life so much. And therefore, the V'chai Behem now applies. Very simple. Okay? There's all kinds of the depth of the understanding of this leads to the most amazing halachic differentiations when you get into the sugya. I mean, it's not really our sugya over here. But yes, as Moshe just pointed out, it's Gandalf telling Frodo, exactly. Can you give him life? Gandalf, yes. So it's true. He deserves to die. Okay. Can you give him life? No? So then how are you determining that you can give him death? Meaning that it's completely and totally outside of any kind of determination on your part. Okay. These are all... Moshe Andel's point, these are all part of the issues that need to be gone into in detail when we go into the sugya of the relationship of Kiddush HaChiyuv of Kiddush Hashem to V'chai Behem and so on and so forth. And, okay, remember, there's all kinds of differences also in terms of the Chiyuvim on these things. If you went ahead and you did it too, right? You go ahead and do something which is being caused by somebody else, it's not considered to be your act. So the guy had a gun to your back and you ended up killing somebody else because you just couldn't allow the guy to take your life. Would you, somebody says, don't do that, you'll be chai of misa. You will not be chai of misa. The reason you won't be chai of misa is because of the fact that it's not your act. Because your mind has been taken over by somebody else. That's called onus. And onus rachmana patre. So therefore, if you went ahead and did it, you would still be putter. This is a different chiyuv because of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, you see. Otherwise, it's not your act. So what difference would it make? When it comes to a goy, there would be no chiyuv to give up his life because it doesn't say the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem on the goy. There's no viahavta. So therefore, the whole thing is basically inverted. There's no v'chai behem, but the goyim are not mitzuvim on Kiddush Hashem. Now, that would not be true about the question of rape, however, as the Gemara says, because rape is basically your decision. That's because you have to have an erection to do the rape. Where'd that erection come from? So that is considered to be your act. Masha Einkein, where it's simply an act and does not require an involvement in the act, that's different. So for murder, you would be punter. There was a case, Ahi Ubra de Archa. So there was this pregnant woman, and it's on Yom Kippur, and she's dying to eat. They came to Rebbe, what do we do? What do we do? Do we feed her? So Rebbe said to them, okay, first thing to do with this woman, try this, I'm telling you. Whisper in her ear, psst, it's Yom Kippur. Why? Because you got to get it through to the embryo. See, the embryo's got to hear it's Yom Kippur. I mean, you got to make sure that it's a communication that, I mean, you know, embryo is sitting there. They ain't talking to me anyway, are they? But now they are.
The ear canal to the birth canal.
Right. It's Yom Kippur. So they did. So Lechushila, and it worked. The Ilchisha, and the whispering took away the cravings, and now she didn't need to be Michal Yom Kippurim. They went and told Rebbe. Rebbe said, this is a heck of an embryo, man. I'm telling you, somebody big is coming to this. So this is what it says in the Pasuk. B'terem atzercha b'beten yedaticha. Before you got out of the womb, I already knew you. This is what's said about your Miyoha Novi. Sure enough, who do you think grew up out of that fetus? Rabbi Yochanan. So that's why it worked, because the embryo was listening. There was another mice of Ahi Ubra de Orcha, and they came to Rabbi Hanina, and Rabbi Hanina, what should we do? Should we feed her on Yom Kippur? So Rabbi Hanina said, try the old Rebbe trick. So he said, go Lechushila, go whisper in her ear, it's Yom Kippur. Didn't help in the least. So Rabbi Hanina said, aha, Kori Ale, this is not going to be a very good boy. Zoru Rishayim Irachem. You see, the Rishayim are already a bunch of aliens already while they're in the womb. And sure enough, who came out of this one? Shabtai Tzvi. No, I'm sorry. Shabtai Otzar Peri. So this was the famous Shabtai who used to buy up all of the fruits that the Aniyim would have to suffer, and that way he would be able to sell at a higher rate, and he would keep it until the prices went up. He was one of these traders with a D. And so that was the first of the Shabtai Signon. Okay, Rabosai, I leave you with this thought about the way in which you can go all the way back to the womb. Maybe you can do tshuva all the way back to the womb, though, right? I mean...